Elijah set the world record that day, so upset Usain Bolt, the fastest man in the world. So, and we'll look at that, especially that second part of scene next week. But we want to, over these next several weeks, start thinking about what's happening here and why God is using Elijah to do this to the nation of Israel. If you remember, Elijah finds himself at the beginning of chapter 18 here. He finds himself outside of the northern kingdom of Israel. If you kind of remember kind of where we are at in 1 Kings, you have the United Kingdom of Israel under King Solomon, under David, his father, under King Saul. But at the end of King Solomon's reign, a prophet comes and says, no, the nation of Israel is going to be divided because of Solomon's sins, because he started to worship and follow and serve other gods. And so as he's the northern 10 tribes of the kingdom of Israel, and then you have the southern king, the southern two tribes of the kingdom of Judah. And so you have these now over the first kings, these kind of these two nations or two kingdoms going after each other and following. And Elijah is there in this northern kingdom. And because of their sin, as we'll see here, God has Elijah come to King Ahab, and there's this terrible drought. And so we saw in chapter 17 that God takes Elijah out of the northern kingdom of Israel into this city called Zarephath, where a widow cares for him. And we're not sure how long he was there, probably several years he is there, having this widow care for Elijah. But in chapter 18, as we saw last week, he comes back and he has this conversation with a guy by the name of Obadiah. And he tells Obadiah, kind of figures out what's happening, but he also tells Obadiah that I am here to present myself to King Ahab. And Obadiah kind of freaks out about that because they have been looking for Elijah. We'll see that here in a few moments of why they've been looking for Elijah. But in chapter 18, verse 15, we ended with this. Then Elijah said, as the Lord Almighty lives, or the Lord of hosts, the Lord, and you see it's all capitalized, right? Capital L, capital O, capital R, capital D. That is our English translations signifying that this is what is called the personal name of God. That is Yahweh, the Hebrew term, or the German pronunciation is Jehovah. And so this is Yahweh, the God, the Creator God. He has told me that today I will present myself to King Ahab. So as Ruthie read in verses 16 and 17, Obadiah goes to King Ahab and says, hey, we found Elijah, the one we've been looking for. Ahab goes and meets King Ahab, and this is how he greets them. Is that you, you troubler of Israel? And that's a nice greeting. You want to say, hey, King Ahab, nice to see you. Oh, is that you, the one who is causing all this trouble? Again, a three-year drought in the entire kingdom, and we know that it spread to other places as well. 3 years of there hasn't been a drop of rain. There hasn't been a drop of dew. Everything is, lack of a better term, dead. They're looking for grass to feed the horses for King Ahab. And King Ahab comes and sees Elijah and says, calls him the troubler of Israel. In other words, you are the one that has caused this trouble upon our nation. In other words, you must die. Well, Elijah gives it right back to him. And where does this boldness come from? It doesn't come from Elijah. This comes from the Spirit of God working in him. He says, I have not made trouble for Israel, Elijah replied, but you and your father's family have. Because you have abandoned the Lord's command or Yahweh's command. And you have followed Baal or Baals, or you have followed these false gods. And again, if you're there's an outline there in your bulletin, you're following along. What Elijah is saying that Elijah didn't cause the trouble that is happening with the kingdom of Israel. Elijah didn't cause the drought. In fact, it is Ahab that caused the drought. In fact, Ahab's sin. And what was Ahab's sin? That he served these false gods. Again, all you have to do is go back to chapter 16 of 1 Kings and read this about when, hey, this is kind of a summary statement of what happens in the nation of Israel during King Ahab's reign. It says, Ahab, son of Omri, did more evil in the eyes of the Lord than any of those before him. He not only considered it trivial to commit the sins of Jeroboam, son of Nebat, and those were the guy that made these golden calves. You can go back and read that. But he also married Jezebel, the daughter of Ethbaal, king of the Sidonians, and began to serve Baal and worship him, kings of Israel before him. He set up an altar for Baal in the temple of Baal that he built in Samaria. Ahab also made an Asherah pole and did more to arouse the anger of the Lord, the God of Israel, than all the kings of Israel before him. Again, because of the kingdom of Israel have turned their back on the one true God, Yahweh, the creator of the universe, God. God was the one that caused this drought for judgment. Well, how do we know that? Again, we can't jump back in time. We can't go and have a conversation with God. What's really going on here? The text doesn't tell us this. Well, the Bible does tell us this. In fact, in Deuteronomy, God himself, through Moses, tells Moses to tell the nation of Israel that if they choose to follow the false gods of the people that they are going into, I, referring to the Lord will cause a drought. The Lord will hold back the rain. Verse 8, observe therefore all the commands I am giving you today, so you may have the strength to go in and take over the land that you are crossing the Jordan to possess, and so that you may live long in the land the Lord swore to your ancestors to give them and their descendants, the land flowing with milk and honey. The land you are entering to take over is not like the land of Egypt from which you have come, which you have planted your seed and irrigated by foot as a vegetable garden. But the land you are crossing, in other words, the promised land, the nation of Israel, to take possession is a land of mountains and valleys that drinks rain from heaven. It is the land the Lord your God cares for. The eyes of the Lord your God are continuing on it from the beginning of the year to its end. So you faithfully obey the commands I am giving you today to love the Lord your God and to serve him with all your heart and with all your soul. Then I will send rain on your land in its season, but autumn and spring rains, both so that you may gather in your grain, new wine, and olive oil. I will provide grass in the fields for your cattle, and you will eat and be satisfied. In other words, God is saying, if you obey me, I will send the rain. But he goes on and says, if you don't obey me, this is what's going to happen. Be careful, or you'll be enticed to turn away and worship other gods and bow down to them. Then the Lord's anger will burn against you, and he will shut you up. He will shut the heavens up, so it will not rain, and the ground will yield no produce, and you will soon perish from the good land the Lord has given you. So all of a sudden now we have this drought. Why do we have this drought? Because they followed Baal and worshiped him. So here's the plan. Here's what Elijah tells King Ahab. I want you to gather the people together, the nation of Israel. And I want you to gather the people together in this place called Mount Carmel. Now, when I think of Mount Carmel, I think usually of ice cream. This is not ice cream. But you can go over to Israel today, and you can see Mount Carmel. This is a modern day picture. We have no idea where this scene takes place, if it was kind of in the valley or if it was all kind of on the hill. In fact, when I was taught in Sunday school, Mount Carmel is like this one peak, and again, this map kind of shows that, oh, this is the location of Mount Carmel. Well, actually, in reality, this whole entire mountain range is called Mount Carmel, so we don't really know. But either way, Elijah comes to King Ahab and says, I want you to gather the entire nation, this kingdom of Israel, together at this place of Mount Carmel. I want you to bring the 500 prophets of Baal. And again, a prophet of Baal is those who dedicate their lives to serving this false god of Baal. I also want you to bring the 450 prophets of Asherah, the ones that you yourselves, the Jezebel, they're eating at your table. In other words, you are providing the food for them. So I want you to gather all the people together, these 500 prophets of Baal, the 400 prophets of Asherah, and meet me at this place of Mount Carmel. Because there's going to be a showdown. We're going to once and for all determine who really is God in this place. Not even so much in this place, but who really is God. And so that's what happens. One day they all show up. King Ahab agrees to it. They all gather. And again, as the people gather, Elijah goes over some of the rules that are going to happen here in this place. He says, get two bulls. This happens in verse 23. Get two bulls for us. Let Baal's prophets choose one for themselves. Let them cut it into pieces and put it on the wood, but not set fire to it. I'll prepare the other bull and put it on the wood, but not set fire to it. Then you will call in the name of your God. And I will call in the name of, again, look at how it's all capitalized, right? I will call on the name of Yahweh. So the rule is prepare a bull for sacrifice. Place it on the wood, but do not set fire to it. Call on Baal and the Lord to send the fire. And the one who answers, the one who sends the fire to light the sacrifice, at the very end of verse 24 says, the God who answers by fire, he is God. Literally, it's a little more emphatic than that. Again, our English translations kind of smooth that over. Literally, it says, this is God. Elijah tells the kingdom of Israel that by the end of the day, they will know who really is God. And so, Elijah says, hey, you know what? You guys are out. There's more of you. Why don't you guys get this party started kind of a little bit. You guys go first. I'll sit back here. I'll watch. I'll let you do your thing. And you guys take over. And so the prophets of Baal begin. They're crying out all morning long. They're just crying. They're asking, Baal, oh Baal, come send this fire. Come send this fire. And so forth. They do it for, we're not entirely sure when they started. Again, the Jewish day started at 6 a.m., so who knows if they started maybe about 9 o'clock in the morning when they started these things. But either way, they were doing it for a long time, probably 2 to 3 hours. And all of a sudden, we read in verse 27 that at noon, Elijah begins to taunt them. Nothing has happened. There's no fire. These 500 prophets, and we don't know if the other prophets are there, so maybe 950 prophets are all yelling and shouting. They got their drums going. They got their jumping around and doing whatever they do to let them know, let this so-called God know that they mean business. But at noon, Elijah comes to them and says, "Hey, what's happening? There's no fire going on here." And he begins to taunt them. That word taunting means this, to treat with contempt. You see, Elijah sees what the prophets of Baal are doing is pointless or useless or worthless. They're dancing around. They're making all this racket. They're doing everything. And Elijah's just watching this show go on, and he is just probably chuckling inside and thinking, this is ridiculous. How in the world can these people do this? It's pointless. It's useless. It's worthless. So what does Elijah call out to them? He said, "Hey, shout louder. Surely Baal is a god. Perhaps he is deep in thought or busy or traveling, or maybe he's sleeping and you need to get him awake. Maybe he's on vacation. Who knows? But either way, there's no answer." You see, the reason why Elijah knows that what the prophets of Baal are doing is worthless because Elijah knows that Baal is just a made-up god. He's not real. He's a false god created by a human being. Again, that's something that we need to think about. Is that when we read through the Old Testament, we see this nation worships this god, and this nation worships this god, and you hear this all the time. We see that, you know, the hundreds or thousands of gods that the Egyptians worshiped and so forth, and you see this. And you're thinking, well, how do we know that the God of the nation of Israel, Yahweh, is the one true God? The reason why we know is because we're going to find out here at the end is the reason why we know is because He is the living God. He is the Creator God. He is the Almighty, the God of hosts. He wasn't made up or fabricated by human thought. So they shouted louder. They did some terrible things to their bodies to try to get this made-up, false, deaf, blind God to pay attention to them. Midday passed, and they continued their frantic prophesying until the time for the evening sacrifice. The evening sacrifice was about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. So you think about this. Sometimes the amount of time that Elijah gave the prophets of Baal to do this thing, somewhere between 5 to 6 hours. Because the evening sacrifice, I know it's kind of weird in our thinking, the evening sacrifice happened at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. We are called that the afternoon sacrifice. But in the Jewish day, that was evening because the next day started as soon as the first star came out. So 3 o'clock in the afternoon, evening sacrifice all of a sudden comes. And we'll look at Elijah's turn next week. But listen to how the writer of 1 Kings ends this section with the Baal prophets. There was no response. No one answered. No one paid attention. Well, why? Why was there no answer? Why was there no response? Because Baal is a made-up god. He's not real. Baal doesn't respond, gives no answer because Baal is a made-up, false god. You see, these people that worshiped Baal, they thought that Baal was the one that controlled the weather. That was one reason why they thought they would worship this statue. And as we'll see, especially as you go on to the end of chapter 18, as you will see, you know, that Yahweh, the creator of the universe, the Lord Almighty, He is the one that is over everything in this world. He is the living God. He hears when His people pray. He hears every single word that we utter. He sees us. You think about all throughout the Old Testament up to this point in time, You have Hagar that is there in Genesis, and she is kicked out of Abraham's house because of some things. And as she is there sitting next to a well, the Lord comes to her. And what does she, and then the names of the Lord, what does she call Yahweh? The Lord, the one who sees. And that's how it is in our lives. And we celebrate Easter today. But if you don't understand that the reason why God sent His one and only Son to die upon that cross and to rise again 3 days later is because God is the God, the Creator God. God is the God who sees us. And God desires for us to be in a right relationship with Him. And if we don't catch that, then we miss the entire point of Easter. But the nation of Israel had a choice, and we have the same choice of who are we going to serve. This is a choice that happened way back even in Joshua's day. When we sing a song here, choose for yourself who you're going to serve, the song by the Gettys, which is based off of a passage in Joshua that as Joshua brings the people into the promised land, that's what the entire book of Joshua is about, and as Joshua is about to ready to end, come to the end of his life, he gathers the whole entire nation together and he tells them that, who are you going to serve to this day? Choose today. Are you going to serve the false gods of Egypt? Are you going to serve the false made-up gods of the Canaanites that you are living in the land right now? Are you going to serve the false gods of this country or that country? Or are you going to walk in obedience to the living, the one true God, Yahweh? It's the same choice that we have nowadays. We may not have little statues that we bow down and worship like Baal, but the same question of who are we going to serve? Are we going to serve fame? Are we going to serve fortune? Are we going to serve material possessions? Are we going to serve other people? Are we going to serve reputation? Are we going to serve our job? Are we going to serve our country? Who are we going to serve? In other words, who are we going to give the most priority to our life? That's what service is. That's what worship is. The thing that controls us, that causes us to make decisions. That's the most important thing in our lives. Elijah told the nation of Israel, stop wavering. You have two options, Baal or the Lord. By the end of today, in other words, that scene on Mount Carmel, you're going to know who is God, and serve Him. We have the same choice. Yeah, it may not be, the gods may come in different forms. Again, we may not have little statues or giant statues that we worship, but we still have made up gods that control us, that we run after, that we think is more important than serving the one true living God. Who are we going to worship? Who are we going to serve? Who are we going to follow today?